Welcome back to the third episode of the 5-Minute Major podcast. Before we start, I just wanted to say that this has been surreal to be able to sit down with some amazing players and talk with them. And this one's no different because today we are honored to sit down with NHLer David Backes. Now, if you're unfamiliar with who he is, let me catch you up to speed. He was drafted in the 2003 NHL entry to St. Louis Blues, played 10 seasons with them while also being the captain for 5 of those 10 seasons. Then he went on to sign a 5-year deal with the Boston Bruins. Last season, he was dealt to the Anaheim Ducks and just finished his 15th season. David, how's it going? Thanks so much for coming on.
I'm excellent. Thanks for having me on. And yeah, things are well. Just getting back into whatever normal life is like without a season going on and out of the protocols and all the other stuff with the virus, with the NHL. So feeling more human than I have in a long time and starting to enjoy seeing people face to face again.
So to kick things off, you're a big guy. You can score goals. You help the team score. You stand up for your team and you can lay the body. Plus you have the leadership quality that teams love. So looking back on the past 15 years, do you think you maybe the steal of the draft and maybe should have been a top 15 pick? Because I'm not sure if you're a big stats guy, but you're ranked 15 in scoring from your draft.
I guess I took that, you know, I don't know what my expectations were. I guess beginning of that year, I didn't think I was going to be drafted at all. The NHL draft really wasn't on my radar. And all of a sudden there was talk of the NHL draft and going in there. I thought my agent was telling me maybe late in the first, early in the second, when those picks all came and went, I wasn't picked yet. You know, I don't want to say it was sour, but I feel like I used it as fuel to the fire. And I don't know, I take those things as motivation much more than, you know, wow, this is what should have happened and being bitter about it.
Did St. Louis give you any indication that like they were going to take you? Because I was looking at it and they actually traded up to get you. They traded away Corey Stillman to get you 62nd overall.
The rights to Corey Stillman to Carolina to get those pick or to get that pick and then selected me. No, I had no indication. I had an interview with the Carolina Hurricanes the morning of the draft and in Nashville, and pretty informal, like all those interviews mostly are, but I was like, wow, they're picking, I don't know if they picked last in the first round or first in the second round. And I thought when that pick came up, that was going to be me. I think maybe it was first in the second round. I think they picked Danny Richmond, and wasn't it. And so I sat longer, but, you know, I think a lot of people, and I think it's maybe more true back then than it is now, that that's just kind of a where you're at the moment. And there's a lot of progressing and development still to be done when you're 18, 19 years old to become a pro and play in the NHL.
I just want to quickly ask you about Keith Tkachuk, because he was actually one of your teammates for 4 seasons, I'm pretty sure. What was your favorite part about his game? And did you try and like take any aspects from his game and put it towards yours?
Yeah, a guy that I grew up watching and tried to emulate in my game, you know, big net front presence that didn't take any grief from anybody and tried to lead by example. And so a guy I looked up to when he was on Team USA and I was, you know, growing up. And then when I actually my first year in the league, I got called up, and before we got back to St. Louis on a trip, he said, hey, do you want to come live in my basement for the rest of the year? And so I actually lived with him for my first year and got to see the ins and outs of his life. And he had 3 kids, so it was a little bit different. Yeah. I had a girlfriend, but no wife, no kids. So I got to learn how to be a pro from him and, you know, while watching him play the game. So it was a great learning lesson for me.
So you're around like a young Brady and Matthew Tkachuk. Like, did you have, when you were seeing them probably wrestle as kids, did you think that they were going to make it to the NHL?
They're just kids like anyone else, but yeah, they would, you know, wake up in their underwear and sit on the couch, and then I'd make them cry playing floor hockey in their basement. And I think I reminded maybe Brady at a face-off when we lined up against each other in the NHL. I said, I used to make you cry in floor hockey, and I think you should get at me a little bit. Yeah, to think of those kids, what I saw them as, you know, 15 years ago to what they've become as pros and, you know, excellent pros, you know, good family genetics there, 3 first rounders, 3 guys that are going to have, you know, really remarkable NHL careers. It's good lineage.
What was it like being selected as a captain for St. Louis?
It was an honor, no question about it, but with that honor comes a lot of responsibility, and there's a lot more to hockey life when you're a captain than, you know, going to the rink, putting your stuff on, giving it what you got while you're there, and then going home to take care of yourself to get ready for the next day. There's it was definitely a lot more, and I had more respect for the role than ever before because I got to be in it. And then I think it made me a better player moving forward, just to support other leadership groups when I got to Boston.
So I just wanted to talk a little bit about some of your ex-teammates. A few years ago, Tarasenko, he scored the same one-handed tuck move twice in, I think, one playoff run. And to me personally, that was always one of my favorite playoff moments, those two goals, because I was a big St. Louis fan not too long ago. And so I just kind of wanted to ask, is there anyone that comes to mind when you think of like just one of the most creative goal scorers that you've played with or played against?
Yeah, Vladdy was a guy that was just instant offense that, you know, when, I don't know if he got mad or inspired or whatever, if all of a sudden there was a moment where it was like, screw it, I'm just going to go score. I think his ability to do that was unlike any other player I've played with. And, you know, a guy that if he's healthy, scores 35, 40 goals a year, no question. And the release on a shot with, you know, no backswing, it's, you know, standing in front of the net and he'd be like, okay, stand on the glove side and I'm going to shoot it right at you and, you know, move at the last second and the goalie will never stop it. Those types of things. And then he'd execute it. So, you know, he was remarkable. You know, Paul Kariya later in his career, pretty dynamic. Brad Boyes had the year in St. Louis where he had 40 plus goals and just to see the ability that he had to score from anywhere and in different ways, pretty awesome season. Pasternak in Boston, him and Marshy too, the way that they can just, you know, trying to defend him in practice and they're on their edges and you're waiting for him just to wipe out or to quit. And all of a sudden he's back on a different edge and around you and still controlling the puck. And, you know, the way that it almost like they control the puck so close to their feet that if you go to poke it, you hit them in the skates and they fall and it's a trip and then they score on the power play. So it's, you're seeing a little bit of that in the playoffs that they're just special players, offensively gifted. And with the game trending the way it is, you know, I think they're only going to get more room and more leeway to show off the brilliant skills that they do have.
So you're talking about all your old St. Louis teammates. How emotional was it to say goodbye to St. Louis and turn over that new leaf and join Boston?
It was a tough, you know, I was actually at Alex Pietrangelo's wedding that weekend of free agency. And so I went there as his teammate and left there as a Boston Bruin. So it's, you know, kind of weird how it all intermingles. And I was in St. Louis because that's where his wedding was. So, you know, tons of emotions, place that I never wanted to leave and felt like, you know, was home to me, was for 10 years, was captain of the team. And then, you know, it's the business side. And, you know, truthfully, it was, I wanted a 5-year deal. They wanted a 4-year deal. And outside of that, the numbers probably would have worked, but just didn't happen. So here we are. And, you know, I have no regrets. I think I've become a better person. Our family's become stronger. We've gotten to experience, you know, East Coast living. Now we're on the West Coast and got to skip a winter season that would have been in Boston or St. Louis or Minnesota in the middle of a pandemic. And our kids were able to be outside every day in the sun to the playground for a walk, pool, beach, whatever. And when you're isolated and just with your family can really only do outdoor things, you know, it's just been a blessing. So I think all those things happen for a reason. And you know what, truthfully, St. Louis got to win a cup in 2019 and you know, it worked out for them too.
What was it like to play against St. Louis in the Stanley Cup playoffs?
It was heavy, emotional. You know, I think you still had a lot of former teammates on the team, still wanted that team to win a Stanley Cup, just not at my expense. I think if it could have been alternating years where they win it 1 year and, you know, myself and Boston win it the next year, that's phenomenal, but just not the way it works out. You know, and I think it's even layered heavier on that because I didn't play games 5, 6, or 7. So I left a series that was 2-2 and, you know, I was a spectator the rest of the time. So I feel like I'm never got closure to the series. It was handled by somebody else and I was healthy skating, just not inserted in the lineup. So, all those things, you know, layer on top of each other. It was a lot being back in the city and seeing all the familiar faces and familiar area that, you know, I lived in, and now to be playing against them and not liked by those same fans that were, you know, adoring me a couple years later or prior.
When you were playing in St. Louis just in early part of May, did you expect that video tribute? Because I know you got really emotional during it.
I didn't know what was going to go on. I knew it was, you know, kind of throwing me a bone to get another game in there. Hadn't played a ton down the stretch. Team was out of the playoffs, and as is typical, they play the young kids to get them some seasoning end of the year. And I don't know what was going to happen. And all of a sudden, you know, they're like, okay, be ready, second TV timeout. And I'm like, well, ready for what? And then they rolled tape, and yeah, I had to keep it together and keep playing a game. And then after the game with my parents there and my wife making that video and, you know, the reception from the fans, it was just all got to me. And it was a special moment that I'll remember forever.
Over the past couple of weeks, the NBA have had some like crazy fans. What do you think is one of the craziest fan interactions you've had?
There was a game in Phoenix. So I got hit by Seabrook the year before, where he kind of knocked me stupid in the corner. Duncan Keith saying "Wakey, wakey, Backus," and so we got to Phoenix the next year, and some fan in warmups had a "Wakey, wakey, Backus" sign up in the stands of warmups, and I was like, I was fuming, like just pissed.
Yeah.
I ended up scoring 4 goals that night, so I think I won that battle. But yeah, that's just one of those things that sticks in my mind of a fan interaction that. You know, was able to use to my benefit at least.
Was that probably your highest scoring night?
I had 4 in Detroit, maybe a couple years before that as well. But yeah, and none of them were empty netters. So those are some proud moments for me.
Yeah.
So we can thank those fans.
Yes. Motivating factors.
How did you come about found your foundation, Athletes for Animals? Like, why did you decide to create that?
That started with, you know, in college when my wife, then girlfriend, and I wanted an animal, but we're renting an apartment. We have really no means or ability to pay for an animal or to, you know, sneak them in and out of a apartment 100 times a day to go to the restroom. So we just started volunteering at the local Humane Society and walking dogs. And that was kind of our fix and loving on them and, you know, cleaning cat kennels. And that was our attachment to animals when we were in college. And then when we got to St. Louis, it was like, okay, let's attach ourselves to this community while, you know, helping out some animals. And so we continued that work and then saw how big of a need there was for someone to speak up for the animal welfare community, especially in the, you know, lower Midwest, where there's a lot of puppy mills and there's a lot of need for homes for homeless animals. So that kind of became our passion. And after doing that with just various organizations around town, we saw how many other athletes needed or wanted to become connected with their animal communities. So Athletes for Animals was formed, and we do some one-off unique fundraisers to raise money. And it all goes back to other organizations in the form of grants and, you know, continue our work with, you know, fostering relationships with other athletes and local animal welfare organizations or initiatives to continue the good work.
I just have one last question, kind of. What was it like to be on the Olympic team?
Olympic team, 2010 in Vancouver was probably the funnest time I had playing hockey, representing my country, you know, still in North America, my family able to be there. Just, we were playing a 12-15 game every day, so you got to play the game, have the rest of the night to enjoy it, maybe practice the next day early and have, you know, the rest of the afternoon to enjoy the city or the village or whatever it was. So that was incredible. And then to go to Russia with the history, U.S. Russia, to play in that Olympics, TJ Oshie's roommate, you know, seeing what he was able to do in the shootout. Another opportunity when you can wear your country's colors, it's phenomenal. On the Olympic stage, it has a special aura, also incredible. So couldn't say enough positive things about playing the Olympics, and I think the NHL should be there every time Olympics happens.
All right. Well, I just wanted to say personally, thank you so much for coming on. This has been an absolute blast, and it's been really great talking to you, hearing what you have to say.
My pleasure. Thanks for your time as well.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming. If you liked what you just heard on this week's episode of 5-Minute Major Podcast hosted by Jeff, Dylan, and Hannah, be sure to tune in next week because we sit down with New York Rangers rookie who happened to just sign another 1-year contract. You can listen to more 5-Minute Major Podcast episodes on Spotify, Apple, and on CKDJ.net.